This is a Suno India production. You're listening to the Apple.
Hi, I'm Priya.
And I'm Rakesh.
We are the hosts of Dear Pari, India's first narrative podcast on child adoption. This podcast is being brought to you by Suno India, a multilingual podcast platform for issues that matter.
Since the beginning of Dear Pari, we have always strived to put out accurate information and adoption processes. As a part of International Adoption Awareness Month, we spoke with Central Adoption Resource Authority CEO Deepak Kumar to pose him some frequently asked questions by prospective adoptive parents and parents who have adopted. Some of these questions have been sourced from prospective adoptive parents themselves. Despite the process being very clearly laid down, it is disheartening to see so many people still wanting to opt illegal ways of procuring a child in the name of adoption. We hope this interview answers some, if not all, questions that you may have. Make sure to also listen to Kalnal Deepak's interview from season 1 of Dear Pari to understand more about the law around adoption.
Thank you so much for coming on to our podcast once again, Dear Pari. We've actually got a very good response for the episode that we did with you last year. And so it's really nice to have you back on our show once again. Could you just give a brief introduction of yourself?
Yeah, I'm Kal Deepak Kumar. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Central Adoption Resource Authority, Ministry of Women and Child Development. And I am working here since July 2016.
Thank you, sir. Sir, can you sort of tell us currently how many parents are waiting to adopt and how many children are in the pool waiting to be adopted?
Domestically, we have almost 25,000 parents who are right now waiting for adoption or maybe registered, we can say. And as far as inter-country adoptions are concerned, we have around 900 parents who would have registered from different countries abroad.
So the waiting period seems to be increasing every year. I'm being told that it is roughly around 25 months for those who are opting for children aged between 0 to 2 years. What is the reason for the increase in the wait time?
See, on an average, every month we find that almost 1,000 parents registered for adoption, and we are able to place just about 350 children every month. And most of the parents who register or get placed are less than 2 years old, or maybe younger children, maybe we can say overall less than six years old. And hence we find that every month there is a extension in the queue because 1,000 parents get added, whereas we are able to just place 350 children. So that's why it is increasing.
Recently, we heard that CARA has come up with categories in the special needs section. Can you please tell us a bit more about this? And also, does normal category now include minor and correctable special needs?
We have a normal category for the purpose of adoption, which is defined. And we also had a special need category, which was defined in one of our schedules in the regulations. And these had certain kinds of medical health condition or ailments which can be permanent or temporary in nature, which was considered as children having special needs for purpose of adoption. So now this was broadly divided into just two or three categories. One was physical special need and mental special need. And hence our database did not have So that kind of a filter or maybe provision where we could specify very clearly what kind of a need or requirement the special needs children are having who are placed in these two categories, except for the fact that they were classified as having physical special need or a mental special need. So that was making it difficult for even the prospective parents who were looking to adopt or consider adopting special need children from our existing system. Hence, there were a lot of requests where they wanted these to be further sub-categorized so that it enables better filtering and sorting out so that people can just focus or look into a particular kind of a special requirement which they will be able to manage. And hence, there was a subcommittee of a medical expert chaired by one of the doctors from All India Institute of Medical Sciences, Delhi, Dr. Gulati. She submitted a report suggesting that these special need be further subcategorized into 14 subcategories so that it is easier for the families to decide whether they want to go ahead with adopting a particular child or not. And it would be easier to filter out from our special need portal also. And that would actually result in facilitating the adoption of special need children as well. Because people will be more confident in looking into the requirement and accepting a child. So we have done that kind of after the study and the report. We are now into the process of incorporating it in our system so that it becomes easier for everybody to look into the condition of the special need child and how whether they will be able to accept and then look after the child or not. So the acceptance matching and all will obviously be more fine and better.
Sir, sometimes though there have been instances where there are some incomplete or non-verified medical reports. So what steps is like CARA doing towards ensuring that the medical reports are the ones that are being uploaded are up to the mark or even updated for that matter? I mean, is there something that you are doing from your side to tackle this issue?
See, that was also another concern as far as the health of the child was considered and its categorization. Hence, this the module which we are implementing now will digitize the medical examination report completely. So, as per the recommendation of this medical expert committee, we are digitizing this MER module completely, where firstly the doctor's registration and other details would be uploaded on hearings, and then they would only those who are found to be good in their the field of doing the assessment or having a decent repute, those would be the one who would be there linked with the adoption agency who would be reviewing and actually making the medical examination report. And then these reports will also, since it will become digital, there are certain mandatory fields which they have to perforce fill up. And also all the reports which are mandatorily required to be conducted will have to be uploaded before this MER is digital medical examination report is accepted by the system. So once this is implemented properly, then I think things will fall in place so that all reports perforce will have to be uploaded before the MER gets completed. And since there are the options would have to be chosen from the one which we will be putting up in the module. So there will be any field where it would be left blank or maybe there will not be any details. And once that is done, even the categorization would be done properly because all the relevant details would be there by the system.
Okay. Sir, we're celebrating the National Adoption Month this month. How is CARA observing this, and why do you think it is important for us as a country to observe this month?
See, every issue is deliberated upon by the society in a particular manner, and it is a very important and sensitive issue. And hence, to focus on one aspect, we find that there is always some sort of an international day or a week or a month which is given for a particular cause. So similarly, November is given treated as an international adoption month. And we, being the central authority of Government of India, we do take certain initiatives during this month. which we are doing this time as well. So as part of it, we already had one parents meet in Delhi and NCR, where a lot of 75 to 80 parents and prospective adoptive parents, they participated. It was very successfully held in Constitution Club of India in Delhi. And taking a cue, we would be having such kind of a meet on a maybe slightly more regular basis in different regions as well. So we are planning that. Second is we are also planning advocacy through various other means. We had a couple of radio programs on FM Gold and FM Rainbow where certain issues were discussed. Even people were answered queries during the helpline session which we had recently. Coming Saturday, in fact, we are visiting all the orphanages which we are having the SARS in Delhi and NCR. And we'll be going and meeting the children with certain other people, with some gifts, sweets and all as part of our advocacy and also looking after the children. We also organized one event for painting and slogan writing, and we had a storytelling session for our children here in Delhi, in CCRT in Dwarka, the Cultural Training Center. So that was also conducted last week. So we keep doing certain events, mostly in the month of November. We focus more on advocacy and generally awareness of this thing.
One other question that I have is, you know, there are some parents who feel that the 48 hours timeline to reserve a child, you know, maybe too much pressure on prospective parents. How do you respond to this?
What is the suggestion then?
No, I think a lot of people feel that, you know, it's 48 hours, you have to suddenly decide and go to the, you know, place where the referral is coming from. Sometimes you have to go within 48 hours. So is there any, I mean, have you got such issues?
We don't expect the families to go to the place where the child is within that 48 hours of referral. It's meant to reserve looking at the profile. In the profile, we do give medical examination report, child study report, and the photograph of the child. That's good enough for a family to take a decision on. Because we are already sending referral based on their certain choices, like which state, which age group, which sex. All those things they have already decided based on which we have given a referral. It is just they need to refer to the health condition of the child and also maybe the profile like photograph and all. So that's fair enough to take a call in 48 hours. Because finally, you can't keep it too long because the child actually has to be placed in adoption. If in every referral cycle, we let the parent maybe far too long to decide, then the child would be stuck up in this referral cycle only for too long. Many of the child gets placed, say, after 8 or 10 referrals. So that takes time. So we don't want the children to be stuck up in the system.
Right. Thank you for that perspective, sir. Yeah. So there are also like a lot of times, you know, in some of the adoption groups and elsewhere, you see that they're asking, even like, for example, I've been approached many times, people saying, you know, this person wants to give up their child for adoption. Can I adopt them? And, you know, I'm constantly telling them to go towards CARA. So there seems to be quite a few people who want to do what they are terming as private adoptions. Could you tell our listeners why they should only go through CARA and how these adoptions, which are not happening within within CARA, how are they different?
See, presently, there are only two laws of adoption in India. One is the Hindu Adoption Maintenance Act and another is the Juvenile Justice Care and Protection Act. Now, we administer the JJ Act. Now, which is a common law. AMA, which is only for the Hindus and the six Jains, both and all are also included in that. That has got a different perspective a couple or a family who does not have, say, a male child can adopt a male child. If it does not have a female child, then it can adopt a female child. So it was more of a parent-centric act where the families, because of certain, they were looking at either having an Uttaradhikari kind of a thing if they did not have a child or something. So they were, it was provisioned because it was there in the Hindu religion. So that is one act and it is not regulated properly because it was considered that the giver and the taker, they would be knowing each other and the giver being the biological parents of the child would ensure that the best interest of the child of whom they are handing over to an adoptive family would be assessed by the giver. So this was the main reason why it is not, why it was not provision to be regulated. However, in either HAMA or in JJ Act, it is very clearly mentioned that there should not be any transaction of money or any such kind of a thing, because then it becomes a child trafficking, it becomes buying and selling of a child. Now, moment you get into the realms of direct adoption or something, how do you ensure that this has not happened? Okay, because nowadays, if people are wanting to undertake a direct adoption with so much of a queue and other things in place, how does even a taker ensure that the proper source verification of the child was done? Because invariably in all that, most of the direct adoption cases, you will always find that there will be some middleman. Maybe it may be undisclosed officially, but practically there's always a middleman involved, be it a nurse, be it a midwife, be it maybe some NGO person or otherwise. So they are the one who arrange, and the sourcing is always suspect. In many direct adoption cases, we realize that the families who deliver a child has been told wrongly that the child was stillborn, and then they are sourced and placed in consideration with money. And the person who is taking, they think that they've got a child who was relinquished by somebody, maybe unwed mother or something. But all these happen under the exchange of money. So direct adoption is always threatened with danger because there is no source verification. Nobody is doing it officially. And also the eligibility or suitability check, which we do through the home study report, nobody is doing it. We never know what is the motive, what is the purpose, whether the family would be able to take the care of the child or not. And follow-up obviously is never done. So we never suggest that anybody should contemplate getting into this direct adoption, because that is more than, there's a vast possibility of such cases going awry or wrong.
Sir, when if in case we hear of somebody who is saying that, you know, we'll source a kid and you can take, you know, help you get adopt this child, what can somebody do? Like, how do we, you know, bring this to the notice, and who do we bring this to notice? Should we bring it to the notice of CARA, or should it be the...
That's absolutely a cognizable offense. If you look into Regulation 32, 33 and 34, any child who is in need of care and protection, obviously you would be offering to place such a child. So a child who is in need of care and protection, who the person is aware of, is supposed to report it to Child Welfare Committee. If he is not reporting it and is trying to directly place it with somebody or soliciting families to place a child, then it is a violation under 32, 33, 34 firstly. And also it violates Section 80 of the JJ Act. Section 80 very clearly says that anybody who is undertaking adoption which is not as per the Act and the regulations, it's a cognizable offense. And the fines and other things like RI and monetary fines are also given there. So first thing, it should be an FIR, should be filed in the nearest police station quoting these sections of the provision. Then at the state level, you've got a State Child Care Protection Society, SCPCR. It can be told to them. We may be also kept informed. Also, the NCPCR can be kept informed. But these are basically the bodies where you can lodge a complaint. And at each district, there is a child welfare committee. Their job is to ensure that things are pertaining to the child are done legally and properly. So the CWC must also be intimated. So there are various options which a person can undertake for reporting in such cases.
Also, can you tell our listeners what steps need to be taken in case they see like an abandoned child? If they know of somebody who wants to give up their child, what are some of, how does one navigate that? How does one advise on that?
See, the first is you're talking about somebody who is finding an abandoned child. So as I quoted, Section 32, 33 and 34 very clearly says that that has to be reported. It's a bounded duty. If you don't report, actually you're not complying with the law. So anybody who does not have to do anything, but they find a child who is in need of care and protection or an abandoned child, first thing they're supposed to do is report. Now, reporting has to be finally done to the Child Welfare Committee. Now, if people are not aware of the Child Welfare Committee or their contact details, then the best thing to do is to call Childline. Their number is 1098. So they can just tell Childline, some of the people from the Childline, which is in 2/3 of our country's district, Childline is there, they would come and rescue the child immediately and take it for the required care and nutrition. So first thing is, if the child is not in condition to be placed in an institution, it will be taken to the hospital. It will be looked after properly. And they would ensure that it is reported to the child welfare committee also for further action in this regard. An interim care order is issued by the child welfare committee for placing the child in one of the adoption agencies, and then rest of the process is followed. So that is what you're supposed to do if you find a child anywhere. Now, the second issue you asked was if somebody wanting to relinquish a child. Relinquishing is also known as surrendering a child. The child can be surrendered in front of the child welfare committee, and it is kept secret. And if there is an unwed mother or maybe a female who is wanting to relinquish a child, then she can do it in front of the single female member of the child welfare committee also. So otherwise, the quorum of the child welfare committee is 3 out of the 5 members. But in such cases, it can be done even in private in front of just the single, the lady member of the child welfare committee. And there, the DCPU provision for the counseling facility, the person who is surrendering is duly counseled about the consequences and other things. And the first aim is to just try and see whether the child can still continue to be with the biological family or the parents. And if not, if because of socio-economic culture, they have decided finally, then the child can be accepted and taken and placed in the interim care in an agency. And the person surrendering the child is made to sign a deed. In that, there is an option whether her auntie at any later time frame needs should be disclosed or not. If she prefers not to disclose, then it is always kept a secret even later on, and it's not disclosed thereafter anywhere. And there is a 2 months of a reconsideration period as well. If the surrendering parent wants to change the decision, then that option is also available for the next 60 days. So within that period, if they come and ask for the child back, then it can also be given back. Otherwise, after 60 days, the child may be declared legally free for adoption and placed in adoption. Then they cannot reclaim back the child. So this process of surrender, in case still somebody is not very keen or confident about doing this process, then at least it can be advised that the child should not be left anywhere in unattended, in maybe in a temple or somewhere else. Rather than that, they can go and place the child in a palna or a cradle, which is kept outside each of the adoption agencies. So in all the adoption agencies, outside on the gate, you will find a palna. They can just go and place the child in the palna. That will be taken as an abandoned child, and the rest of the process will follow. So that is also an option.
Okay. So like sort of, maybe I'm sort of flipping the coin when I ask you this question. Does the ministry or like the government of India have any measures to support, say, those who want to keep their child but are unable to financially afford that? Like, are there any measures for that also?
Yes, there are. See, when we look at the entire Juvenile Justice Act, so we are handling 2 things. One is the child in conflict with law, and another is child in need of care and protection. So when we look at the child who are in need of care and protection, then the government has provision for 2 types of care. One is the non-institutional care, and the second is the institutional care. Now, the government always wants that the children should be generally non-institutionalized. They should not be for too long staying in institutional care. Institutional care should only be a temporary measure or a last resort, because the growth and development of a child is best in a family. So we don't propagate that those who are not affording a child should place it in an agency and leave it there. If they permanently, because of any reason, relinquish, they go on adoption, that is fine. Otherwise, there are 2 more things under which a non-institutional care is ensured. One is foster care, and the second is the sponsorship. So there is a sponsorship program also, in which if there are the people can keep a child, and the government pays, I think, 2,000 rupees per month per child or something like that. So though we don't administer that, it is administered by the state government and our central government. So there are 2 more alternatives. One is the sponsorship, and another is foster care. But foster care, it should not be with an aim to adopt a child. It's a temporary in nature. And only those children who are not adoptable or who are over 6 years of age, they are the ones who can be placed in foster care.
And foster care is administered on a state level basis, if I am to understand correctly, right, sir? It's not centralized as such.
Yes, foster care is handled by the ministry has issued a guidelines to that effect, and every state has got a guideline. So, and model JJ rules 2016 also defines certain provisions or the things it needs to be ensured while implementing the foster care program. So, refer to those. Based on that, the state governments do have a provision of giving a child in foster care. But obviously, those cannot be less than 6 year old child and who are legally free for adoption.
Sir, another question that I have is regarding to, you know, there are some parents who say that, you know, there have been maybe not a lot, but a couple of instances where agencies are asking parents for money, maybe in the form of donations or in other forms. Can these be, how do parents raise such issues with CARA? Like, is there a system to report such agencies, especially if we feel that they're indulging in illegalities?
Yes, it is. Because we have very clearly stated what all are considered to be an offense by an adoption agency, which may entail suspension or fine or revocation. So if you refer to our regulations, Regulation 25 very clearly states that. And in 25 sub regulation 2 and sub regulation H, it says that financial irregularities or malpractices or receiving any donation, whether in cash, kind, from prospective adoptive parent or adoptive parent, this is considered to be a violation and this may result in revocation of the recognition of the agency. So this is a cognizable offense which we have specified in our regulation. So if anybody is doing that, then it's details. They can bring it to a notice. They can also tell the state adoption resource agency about it. The local DCPU is also there who can be complained. And if nobody is there, then they can definitely highlight it to CARA. We have got a grievance and a query portal along with the caring portal. So a person can even log in there and report it. Then we have got our help desk email. It can be reported through that as well.
Also, in terms of, like, what is the role of CARA in terms of looking into the condition of the agencies and how the children are being looked into? Like, does CARA have a role in sort of coordinating, you know, the different SAs and the conditions in which children are living, or is that something that is the responsibility of the state?
It is the responsibility primarily of the state governments, because the registration of the agencies are also done by the state government. Even those who are funded through the ICTS grant, that is also through the state government. The state government is supposed to definitely look into and ensure that these agencies are functioning properly. As per the model JJ rules, there is also provision of having a permanent inspection committee kind of a thing at the district level as well as the state level. They are supposed to do it periodically, at least once in a quarter. There's a format of inspection and what has to be seen, what are the parameters also defined in the model JJ rules 2016 issued by the ministry. The state government is actually supposed to, you know, implement or do all these things, which in many cases we find wanting. And the moment we get certain details, we also instruct the state governments from here to inspect certain agencies against whom there are things reported which is not which prima facie shows that there is something wrong or they are not complying with certain provisions. So in such cases, the state government then does take action and they report it to us. In many cases, we also levy a fine or maybe recommend closure of an agency if certain things are reported. And apart from that, we also do visit some agencies whom we shortlist based on certain facts. It can be good agency also. It can be an agency against whom it has been reported. And our team of our officers and maybe staff, they also regularly go and visit some of the agencies once in a while.
In the last, last few months, actually, I think there have been two instances that have come to light about children who were mistakenly declared legally free. How do these things happen? Like, how do those, you know, legally free for adoption and being placed in adoption and then the biological parents coming and claiming the children? How do these things happen? And is there some sort of performance review being done by CARA of the SAs with regards to mistakes like this?
The role of DCPU and CWC is very important in any child who declare legally free. Actually, the Child Welfare Committee is empowered to declare a child legally free for adoption. So that responsibility primarily rests with the Child Welfare Committee, but the entire ensuring this process is done properly is that of the District Child Care Protection Unit. It is the DCPU who is supposed to advertise. It is the DCPU who is supposed to do a social investigation report. So many a times, they are in connivance with the adoption agencies, and then they pass or they get certain orders passed, which is without due diligence, and which reflects very poor on the functioning of these institutions. And also, it reflects poor on the functioning of that particular state adoption resource agency who fails to monitor such incidents, which is getting reported frequently. So, the moment this comes to our light, we definitely write to the state government asking them to inquire into detail and fix responsibility and take action against those who are found to be not discharging their duty properly.
So, a lot of times, we also see prospective parents violating, say, a child's privacy by posting medical history, etc. on Facebook groups. This I have seen often happens from the immediate placement list. What can be done to deal with this? And like, do you have a message for prospective parents regarding this?
See, disclosure of identity of any child is an offense under Section 74 of the JJ Act. So in case anybody is doing this, then obviously it needs to be reported and suitable action will be taken. And the best is to report to the SCPCR or NCPCR, because as per Section 109, they are the one who are supposed to ensure that the Act, all provisions of the acts are complied with by everybody. Any implementation of the act and anything which relates to a violation in the implementation, they are supposed to look into it and take action against the people who are found to be guilty in that. So the NCPCR and the SCPCR at the state level must definitely be reported about it immediately. We can also be kept informed so that we can take suitable action.
The last few months also saw a couple of reports in media about disruptions in adoptions, especially among older children. What steps is CARA taking to sort of tackle this issue?
See, the placement of older children is always a difficult issue because adjustment, especially in the families of these children, becomes very, very tricky issue. The main reason is neither the parents who are trying to adopt a child are properly counseled or prepared, and nor the children, older children who get placed with the families are actually counseled and prepared. So there is a gap in the provisioning of the counseling resource at the ground level, both in terms of counseling of children and parents, which is observed. We are working on it, how to strengthen this and how to create resources at least up to the district level. So we are trying to have certain plan and provision for provisioning this. That is one step. And the second is, we find the disruption in the older children is high because earlier the older children were not getting placed in any manner. They used to stay in the child care institutions and grow out of it for these institutions. But with the linkages of the CCI with the SAS, we are trying to find families for them. So this is the initial teething problem which any new thing which starts. Earlier, the older children were not getting placed with the families because they used to remain in the child care institutions which were not thinking about their adoption. But now we are trying to do that. But we hope that this issue of disruption gets slightly tackled with better implementation by having the parents also counseled, the children also counseled and prepared, and having a slightly filtered kind of an approach while trying to place such older children with their families.
Sir, there are also a lot of times delays that are happening with regards to the court process and, with regards to getting the birth certificate. What is CARA doing to, on ensuring, to sensitize the agencies regarding this? Like in some states, it seems to be moving faster because the agencies, at least from my experience and having spoken in Maharashtra and Orissa, it seems to be fairly streamlined. The agency is following the process, but it's not the same in some other states. So, like, what is CARA doing regarding this, regarding the court process and, the birth certificate?
Delay in the courts is not primarily because of the agency, but various other factors. Many times, there are no judges posted in the family in the district court, so you get stuck up. Many times, we find that the lawyers are not competent enough to handle the court procedure, and they can't instill confidence in the judges who are wary of passing the order. Third is the sensitization of judges were also an issue. So there were various many other issues related to the delay in the course. We looked into it, and then firstly we created a bench book. Then in 2017 and 18, we had lots of orientation and sensitization program for the judiciary, wherein I myself traveled to the National Judicial Academy and various state judicial academies on multiple occasions to take orientation classes for the family and district court judges. But the issue is, there's a fast movement or rotation in these judicial officers also. The moment we sensitize a set of a group of judges, they move on and maybe a new set of judges are there in family and district court. So this is definitely an ongoing process, but still we are trying to look into it now differently. We are trying to amend the act also, wherein we wanted to give the responsibility of passing the adoption order to the district magistrate instead of the family or the district court. That would help in mitigating these delays which we observe, because the DMs would be more confident, as it is their body, the child welfare committee, the DCPU, who does the work there at the district level. They are monitored by the district magistrate. So when it comes to the district magistrate's court, I think we would be more confident in looking into the adoption cases and would be better sensitized to pass an order without much delay. So that we are trying to do. The government is planning to introduce a bill for amendment in this regard in due course.
Okay. Sir, also in regards to, the documents that CARA, has in its guidelines, right? So when parents go in for adoption, there have been instances when agencies ask for additional documents apart from these documents. So what can parents do regarding this, sir? Because I think, again, this is something that seems to be varying from state to state. What can parents do with regards to this? Like, can they push back with the agency and say, no, like, this is what CARA is stating on their website? Or do they have to necessarily give all the documents?
What kind of documents, additional documents?
So, for example, I've been told that sometimes, they've said, oh, get like a police verification thing done. Then sometimes they ask this recommendation letters from two people. Sometimes it's asked right at the, when you go, it's asked during the home study. Sometimes it's asked during the, after you go to, after reservation of the child. If you're taking the child, that is, during the pre-adoption foster care state. So there seems to be like sometimes, once in a while, there seems to be some sort of confusion with regards to the documents. So what do you recommend to parents if they're being asked for anything beyond what's being stated in the guidelines?
See, as long as we are concerned, we only prescribe those documents to be mandatory provisioned, which are there in the regulations. I think Schedule 6 and Schedule 9 caters for all the list of documents which are supposed to be produced. So that should be good enough. Anything additional, I don't think is mandatory required. If the agency is insisting and it can be provisioned without too much of a hassle, I don't find any difficulty in the parents provisioning those as well. However, if there is a difficulty and they're insisting on some unreasonable sort of a documentation or not, they can bring it to a notice. They will ask the agency why they're asking for those documents.
One final question, sir, and this is more to do with for adoptees. So for adoptees who want to do root search, what kind of support is being provided by CARA? And is there some particular department or person within CARA to whom one can reach out regarding root search support?
See, root search is already provisioned in our regulation. So it is obviously third party root search is not permitted. For anybody who wants to know about the root search, they can themselves approach us. But see, how does children come to us? They are either abandoned. We would have tried to find families, family or to maybe reintegrate the child, which you would not have been able to. And that is how the child would have been declared legally free. So if some abandoned child gets adopted, they come back for root search, as it is, we will not be able to help much because we won't have been able to find about the family at that point in time. Now, in cases of surrender, mostly the families or the parents who are surrendering, they give a declaration that they don't want their identity to be disclosed. So the right to privacy overrules the child's right to know about the parent. Because many a time these parents, you know, maybe would have had an unwanted child through maybe out of wedlock or something, and they would have been happily married thereafter, and they would not like their lives to be disturbed at a later time frame. So in those cases, also in cases of surrender, it is mostly in most of the cases, we will not be able to tell the adoptive child about anything about their biological family. So root search, though, they can ask us, they can write to us with the details, whatever they have. And if this case belongs to, say, 20, 30 years or 35 years from today's date, then at that point of time, as it is, we didn't have any centralized database and many of the agencies who were working or operating at that point in time may not be existing. So it becomes difficult for us to help out those cases. But then all those who are being adopted now or maybe, you know, who are going in 2014-15 onwards, there whatever details would be available with us for root searches in future, but subject to the initial condition which I explained to you.
So now is Kara, therefore, if I'm to understand you correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, is Kara then trying to sort of also centralize this information, sir?
No, we have got a centralized database. So any child going on adoption right now, we have a central database right now.
Okay. So including their origin and, you know, if, say, bio parents information is available, then that would be also be available with Kara.
No, we know whether the child was abandoned or whether the child was surrendered. Okay. And you know which agency, which DCPU, CWC did the declare the child legally free. All those details are there. The main physical dossier, or even of surrender and all, that remains in the adoption agency. But then we have got the basic detail pertaining to the child and where their further details are. I suggest that the message should be sent that we must look into the children who are in need of care and protection, should not get into any kind of an illegal adoption, should not get into any middlemen. In case any child is found, definitely it must be reported. If not anything, then 1098 must be dialed and reported upon. And if we all do our duty like this, I think it will be a safer place for all our children.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dear Pari. For more updates, do check out our newsletter. You can subscribe to it on snowindia.in. As independent producers, we rely a lot on your support. So please contribute on our support page at snowindia.in.
As always, I would like to thank Team Snow India for their support in putting together these episodes. Rakesh Kamal, our production lead for editing. Tarun Nirvan, our digital lead for technical support. Kunika Balotra and Vaishali Pandian for research and reportage. Nikhil Rao of Indian Ocean for original music. And Priyanka Kumar for the incredible artwork.
Subscribe to Snow India.